Welcome to the City Club of Eugene's November 10th, 2017 program, Expanding Veteran Services in Lane County. Some of our veterans returning home from war in the Middle East and Afghanistan, as well as some of our older veterans, sometimes face great challenges. Our two speakers today will enlighten us on some of the successful services and proposed programs available for veterans in Lane County. This is the 10th program in our 2017-2018 programming year. I'm Sandra Bishop, City Club of Eugene President. The City Club brings together civic-minded people to make Eugene a better place to live, work, and play, even in the rain. We're a member-supported nonprofit. Our members have a direct influence on public policy. Become a member of City Club at cityclubofeugene.org. Support for City Club is provided by our members and sponsors, including Hearing Associates, Hacksaw, the Housing Authority Community Service Agency of Lane County, Jerry Detelm, architect, landscape architect, and one of our Sapphire sponsors, George Rohde Repair Shops, providing car care with a conscience. And they have three repair locations in Eugene: Euro Asian Automotive, Stadium Automotive, and Auto House. Or you can find them online at eugenerepairs.com. And special thanks to PAC Info Solutions and KLCC Radio. City Club programs are broadcast on public radio station KLCC 89.7 at 6:30 p.m. on Mondays following the program. The coordinator for today's program is Marty Wilde. Marty's a longtime member of City Club and one of our past presidents. Marty is a colonel in the Air National Guard and a veteran of Afghanistan with 23 years of service. And we really want to thank Marty for his service and to the country and his service to City Club in organizing this program. So thank you, Marty. And Marty's going to, I'm going to turn it over to Marty, and he's going to introduce our speakers today.
Thank you. We have two speakers today. The first is Joseph Riley, who is the Lane County Veterans Services Program Supervisor. Mr. Riley grew up in Pennsylvania and attended Lafayette College and graduated from the University of Oregon School of Law a couple years before me in 1995. His experience includes AmeriCorps, a clerkship with the Clackamas County Circuit Court, the Multnomah Defenders, and private practice in Lane County. He's worked with the Lane County Veterans Services Office since 2003. Please welcome Mr. Riley.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you very much to the Eugene City Club for inviting me and having this to have this opportunity to talk about veteran services in Lane County. I'm also honored to share the mic today with Dr. John LeBeau, who's really one of those people in our community putting themselves and their efforts behind the phrase, thank you for your service. With that in mind, I'd like to ask if there's any veterans in the room, if they would stand up, please. All right. Similarly, if anyone has a veteran in their family, could they raise their hand, or if they even know a veteran? Yeah, this is really something that most people are familiar with, the military service. I'd ask you, though, to raise your hand if that veteran that you know is 35 years or younger. So I think that really points out one of the challenges that we'll be facing as we move forward. If you'll humor me, I'd like to read some statistics. The percent of veterans as within the Lane County population is 8.5%. If you look at veterans who are 85 years of age or older, they make up 41% of Lane County residents who are 85 or older. Between the ages of 65 and 84, the veteran population is 29%. Between 45 and 64, the population of veterans is, or the percentage of veterans is 9.4%. And between 17 and 44 years of age, the percent who have served in the military is only 3.8%. And I think this really illustrates the fact that military service is less and less common in our country among younger individuals, and also that the Iraq and Afghanistan wars have really been borne by a very small segment of our population. What this has resulted in is a very limited number of troops who have had multiple deployments with multiple exposures to the physical and mental rigors that those deployments entail. Now, these veterans are going to need our support, as all veterans do, throughout their lives. And so I think the challenges that we're going to face are in a country where we have increasing health expenses, increasing long-term care expenses, we have veterans who have multiple combat theater deployments with physical and potentially mental health issues as a result thereof. Additionally, we'll have less and less members of our community who have had a similar experience that will know what those folks have gone through and will be able to relate and be able to, you know, help figure out what kind of care, support, resources that those veterans will need. So I think that's really one of the challenges that faces not only our community here in Lane County, but our country as a whole. Furthermore, our older veterans obviously will continue to age and will have increasing health conditions associated with getting older, but also with the health problems which Agent Orange can cause. The largest cohort of veterans in Lane County, and I believe the country, are those that served during the Vietnam era, those that were in country and really many other places during that time period. Were exposed to Agent Orange. The VA, the Department of Veterans Affairs, the federal agency charged with taking care of our veterans, has recognized a number of health problems that are related to Agent Orange, and there are also a number that they're still investigating and hopefully will recognize so that our veterans are able to attain benefits for those problems as well. Furthermore, we're going to have just the general conditions that come with aging. Alzheimer's and dementia, which actually have been increasingly linked to earlier in life traumatic brain injuries from, say, blast exposures during combat theater service. Even PTSD has been found to be a contributing cause to those conditions. First, before we talk about the expansion of services, I'd like to make sure we understand what's going on today, what services we have available in Lane County. VA healthcare is a strong presence in our community. We're under the kind of umbrella of the Roseburg VA healthcare system, and that system entails locally the Eugene VA Clinic, the new clinic out on Chad Drive, as well as the Eugene Behavioral Health Reintegration and Recovery Services facility in the old federal courthouse complex at 7th and High Street. The clinic out on Chad Drive provides primary care as well as some specialty care services, and the downtown facility is mostly mental health services as well as reintegration services, which is mainly services for homeless veterans and housing programs. There's also the Eugene Vet Center that's dedicated to providing counseling services to combat theater veterans and veterans who have experienced military sexual trauma during their service. And we have many local nonprofits who are working to make sure our local veterans are being taken care of. St. Vincent de Paul, Sponsors Incorporated, the Hope Center, Lane County Stand Down, Veteran Housing Project, and of course the Veterans Legacy Project that Dr. LeBeau will talk about shortly. The program I work for is Lane County Veterans Services. Our mission is to help veterans and family members figure out what benefits they're entitled to and help them cut through the VA red tape to obtain those benefits. The main benefits we help with are enrolling in VA healthcare, applying for service-connected compensation, which is basically workers' comp for the military, and then a needs-based safety net for veterans who served during a wartime era or their surviving spouses called pension, often referred to as pension with aid in attendance because that can help with long-term care costs. In federal fiscal year 2016, the work of my program and other veteran service officers, other folks in our communities helping veterans obtain benefits, helped bring in, what is it, $151 million in direct federal benefits to Lane County residents. Oregon as a whole recovered or obtained $1.39 billion under the compensation and pension programs from the Federal Department of Veterans Affairs. And then we also helped enroll many of the Eugene VA healthcare patients, of whom our which facility served 11,000 veterans from our community. And so we'll talk a little bit about the increasing public support for our program, but I hope you can really see that not only do programs like mine help ensure and recognize the service of our veterans, but there's also a direct economic impact. My program's budget is about $600,000, and yet we're bringing in or helping to bring in $151 million to our community. So there's a really strong economic incentive to ensure our veterans are being taken care of by the federal government, as is their responsibility, as is all our responsibility. But it helps free up local non-veteran specific resources for folks who won't qualify for those benefits. In the last few years, there's been an increase in services for veterans. Some of the major programs that have come online in the last 5 years are the Lane County Veteran Treatment Court, based on the federal drug court model. This program works with veterans who are involved in the criminal justice system to, when that involvement is somewhat predicated on their military service, whether they have service-connected conditions that perhaps they were self-medicating for, or mental health conditions that impacted their actions, which then ran afoul of the law and they were charged with crimes. This court's mission is to ensure that those underlying issues are being treated, that the veteran is obtaining the care and services they can through the VA to help prevent future recidivism from those individuals. Also, there's been a strong effort to house our local homeless veterans. Project 365 was really a community-wide effort that housed over 365 veterans in 2015. The goal was to house 365. I think they were up over 400. So it really made some significant impacts in the lives of some of our homeless veterans. As you may have heard, the Eugene VA clinic was recently completed. I think it came online in January of 2015. Some of you may have been familiar with the old clinic out on River Avenue. I think that was about 30,000 square feet. The new clinic is, I think, 110,000 square feet. So really increased their capacity to have providers and provide direct primary care to Lane County veterans. Also, happily, they have now some specialty services, audiology, dental, optometry, even some outpatient surgical procedures are now able to be performed at the Eugene Clinic. So our veterans don't have to always travel to Roseburg or Portland to obtain those specialty services. Albeit they've had some staffing challenges recently that has impacted our veterans' ability to access care. But when it's running at full staff, really has expanded the ability to access care locally and get primary and specialty services delivered to our veterans in our community. One of the, probably the largest statewide impact to veteran services moving forward is the passage of Measure 96 about a year ago, I guess it was. Which this measure dedicated 1.5% of gross lottery proceeds to veteran services in the broadest defined way. Just to take a moment to thank all those who supported it, there was 83.76%, it passed with 83.76% of the vote in Oregon and 83.25% in Lane County. So I think it's really indicative of the respect that Oregon and Lane County citizens as a whole have for our veterans, and really represents the fact that we want to make sure that this segment of our population that has sacrificed so much for our freedoms gets the care and services that they deserve. The result of this measure is that there'll be approximately $9 million per biennium directed towards veteran services in Oregon. The legislature last session was charged with figuring out how that $9 million would be allocated. They increased the state pass-through funds to county veteran services offices, almost doubled that. As a result, Lane County receives nearly $250,000 from the state of Oregon to support Lane County Veteran Services. The majority of our funding, though, is county general funds, almost $350,000. We also receive direct funding from the city of Eugene and Springfield in the amount of $80,000 together. With the increase in state funds, we're able to hire a new office assistant. Currently, we have three accredited veteran service officers working with our clients to ensure they're getting the benefits that they're entitled to. The VA is increasingly going to a paperless process, which actually has put more and more burden on us to handle the paper in our office. All our forms are still, you know, printed out so our clients can read through them and sign them, and then we have to upload them and submit them electronically or fax them into the VA. And so having this additional office assistant capacity will ensure that that paperwork is being properly processed in our office, getting to the VA in a timely manner so that we preserve the date that the veteran is going to be found entitled to benefits. We're also partnering with the Veterans Treatment Court and are hiring, in the process of hiring, a court case manager. This may come as a surprise to many, but accessing services through the VA can sometimes be a challenge. And so this person will help ensure that the folks in the Veterans Treatment Court are able to navigate that system, get those benefits they're entitled to so they get the treatment for those conditions which may have contributed to the criminal offense that they're charged with. Also, and so the majority of the effort for the case manager is going to be funded with Oregon Criminal Justice Reinvestment Funds. We're using some of our County Veterans Service Office funds to increase their time, use the skills they're learning to case manage our criminally involved or our justice involved veterans, navigate VA healthcare to act as a general VA healthcare navigator for all our clients. So if folks are having difficulty accessing care or services through VA healthcare, we'll have a point of contact within our office that will help them navigate that system. The Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, the state agency charged with helping veterans in Oregon, has also received some funding from Measure 96 and are hiring new positions to dedicate services to aging veterans, to LGBTQ veterans, women's veterans, and also creating a volunteer coordinator position to help harness the volunteer ethic in our community for veterans who may need assistance. And then finally, the state is creating a grant program where local nonprofits or other entities will be able to apply for funding for individual projects throughout our state to assist veterans either in transportation needs, with expanding housing resources, veteran services in any sense, allowing really folks in the local community to figure out what their community needs and getting the state support for it. So I feel like we face many challenges moving forward. We have the increase in veterans with complex health issues through aging or multiple deployments, as well as a decrease in the shared service ethic in our general population. But I'm hopeful with the passage of Measure 96 and the strong support that Oregon has shown in the past for our veterans that we really have a foundation to provide support for our veterans moving forward. And through programs like this, where folks are learning about the needs of veterans, you know, I really think our community will continue to come together and provide the services they need. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Riley. And now I'd like to introduce Dr. John LeBeau, who's a board member with the Veterans Legacy Project. And I'll say I see him all over town helping veterans, whether it's at the Veterans Court graduation or out at Camp Alma. He's been a tireless advocate. Dr. LeBeau graduated from the Kansas State University in 1972 and the Kansas City College of Osteopathic Medicine in 1980. His experience includes public health services in rural Michigan, director of a family practice residency, and an emergency room practice. Dr. LeBeau has been a board-certified osteopathic family medicine physician since 1980 and has lived in the Eugene Springfield area since 1998. Please welcome Dr. LeBeau.
Many thanks to the City Club of Eugene and Marty in particular for inviting me to talk about Veterans Legacy today. It's good to hear from Mr. Riley as he provides much needed resources to our vet community. And Veterans Legacy will be relying on his expertise as part of our program going forward. Thanks, Joby. We at Veterans Legacy also like to acknowledge veterans in the audience, and thank you for doing that for me. And thank you very much for your service. I would throw out today that today is the birthday of the United States Marine Corps, 242 years strong. So that's quite an accomplishment. Before I get too far along, let me ask a general question of the folks with us today. We already kind of talked about having veterans in your families. Are there veterans in your families and friends or your community endeavors that you know of that are actually having problems with adjustment, substance abuse, disorders, this type of thing? And if there are, could you raise your hand? Okay, thank you very much. We'll come back to that here in just a little while. The streamlined version of describing Veterans Legacy's mission is that we aim to provide residential treatment in a rural setting for veterans who are experiencing PTSD and adjustment disorders, as well as substance abuse disorders. We will be using what we like to call therapeutic agriculture as a primary theme of intervention, all the while continuing formal clinical care. I think a brief history of the organization will put some of this into perspective. Almost 3 years ago, I was contemplating an alternative approach that would ostensibly increase volunteer participation and food production for Food for Lane County, one of my favorite community service organizations. My bet was that vets would rise to the challenge if we could build an organizational platform. Secondarily, it was my hope that having vets work together might produce some bonding and camaraderie that would be of help for those that were struggling with issues. In discussion with Executive Director Beverly Potter and her staff at Food for Lane County, they asked if I was familiar with the former Forest Inmate Camp, Lane County Forest Inmate Camp, southwest of town, which I had no knowledge of. They brought out information on the site for my review, and it was immediately obvious to me that this was a potential game changer. To me and many others that I've talked to who worked there, the work camp was a brilliant correctional facility strategy. The minimum security complex, situated on 105 acres, was completed in the early 1990s. It generally housed 100 to 110 inmates who were involved in facility services, sustainable farming, and forest mitigation projects and crews, amongst other endeavors. Unfortunately, the budget was tied to ONC timber funding, forcing the periodic closure of the camp, and was finally decommissioned in 2008 by the Lane County Board of Commissioners. I'd like to show you a little picture of that. I have some drone footage here. I would remind the folks on KLCC that all of the pictures that we're using today are on our website. I'd like to thank Lane Electric Co-op for helping us with this, specifically Zechariah English and John Murray, who provided the drone piloting, and Kevin Borgo from our board of directors, who wanted me to note that this was his first directorial endeavor. Look out, Hollywood. Truth be told, I think the boys had a great time with the drone on a beautiful fall day in Oregon, but I think you'll agree it turned out very impressively. They did have a good time, I'm quite sure, so we really appreciate their efforts. After completing a request for offer process per Lane County Commissioner Protocol, on August 23, 2016, Veterans Legacy was selected to negotiate a lease for the inmate camp, which was ultimately completed in February of this year and now is formally known as Camp Alma. However, when Veterans Legacy took over the facility, there was no running water. The roofs leaked. The plumbing was destroyed because of freeze damage, and the entire site was in need of massive cleanup, to name a few of the challenges. Through early donations by individuals and incredible support from the Rebel Rally Motorcycle Association, we were able to start remedying some of the most pressing problems. This, in turn, helped to solve another very pressing problem, the extension of the special use land permit that was essential to allow continued use of the property for our purposes, which was due to sunset in March. The major increase in activity at the site was proof to the county that criteria for the extension were met, and this was granted. Major victories on both fronts. We've had steady volunteer support from such employee groups as Keller Williams, eWeb, Lane Electric Co-op, and many other folks that came for the work days, which accomplished much needed cleanup of the site, although there's much left to do. A big shout out to Comfort Flow Heating and Cooling. Upwards of 100 volunteer hours and $2,500 worth of donated parts were provided to bring the HVAC system back to life. Many of the techs are vets, and we thank all of them for their efforts, as well as the Comfort Flow Company for their unbelievable support. It's just a quick picture of the resurrection of the HVAC system. I showed up here and we had 7 trucks lined up, and crews were going all over the roofs. It was a good thing. They fired up one of the systems up there, and it promptly burst into flames. So I was real happy to have a closed course and professional drivers at that point in time. But thanks so much. This was a picture of the crew and Board of Directors of Veterans Legacy. Now comes some hard facts as Veteran Legacy moves forward. Depending on your sources, there is still 20 to 22 veteran suicides per day in this country. Judging from the show of hands we had earlier, we all know vets that continue to struggle with the effects of war and military service. One of my board members, a veteran himself with long-term PTSD issues, calls PTSD a communicable disease because of the ripple effect to families and the community. For instance, there have been 420 self-identified vets incarcerated in the Lane County Jail from October 2016 to the present. 15% of individuals in the prison system in Oregon are vets. Lane County has the highest percentage or per capita veteran population of any county in the state, as Joby was telling us earlier. We all know of the homeless vet issues that are progressively improving because of many local efforts, but not entirely solved. The statistics are staggering, and a huge percentage of this has an origin in adjustment issues upon return from military services, along with concomitant substance abuse. It's estimated that of veterans in treatment, that 70% have a dual diagnosis of PTSD or equivalent and substance abuse. The plain fact is that what we're doing now simply is not working consistently. In discussion I've had with vets that have been in the VA system, the opinion is that needs are always not met consistently and in a timely fashion with the current treatment programs. In speaking with a number of organizations that work with vets to meet various specific needs, it's my observation that there is often a lack of interfacing to make these efforts more effective. Overall, there's some dysfunction at all levels, all of which impacts our veterans negatively. Veterans Legacy wants to change this paradigm and ideally be the hub for part of the treatment needs and a major interface of veteran activities and programs at the community level. What's needed is unflinching commitment to a reconfiguration of the treatment format. Tomorrow morning, I'm meeting with 12 mental health and substance abuse professionals, all of whom are devoting their time to provide their perspectives on combining the best of current treatment techniques along with new alternative treatment strategies, such as using music and art, acupuncture, a sweat lodge experience, and service dogs, and the list just goes on. We need to vastly expand our horizons in providing holistic treatment alternatives and allow the veteran in treatment to choose the pathway that he believes will best fit his needs to get back to a successful life endeavor. I think I need to make another fact quite clear. Veterans Legacy has not forgotten the female vets in our community who have just as many issues as the men. It's estimated that 98% of female veterans never set foot inside the VA because of a variety of complex issues. However, it just wasn't possible to design a co-ed format at Camp Alma, again, because of many of these same issues. We're hoping to develop a female vet focus group to start understanding and addressing the needs of the local contingent and approach treatment alternatives in an innovative fashion as well. By all means, if you're an interested female veteran, please contact us. But none of this can happen without financial support from the community. Veterans Legacy is an independent, grassroots-driven project who currently receives no governmental funding. We will gladly collaborate with any resource that helps bring best care possible to our vets, but ultimately we want Veterans Legacy to be run by vets for vets. The statistics we see consistently, and I think Joby alluded to this earlier, that there's 30 to 38,000 vets in Lane County. It's a big number. Veterans Legacy is a not-for-profit 501c3 charitable status. The buy-in and support at the community level makes large national donors much more inclined to fund an effort of this type as well. As the common mechanism that happens is to provide matching funds, and this only ensures ongoing sustainability and success. Without local help, however, a unique opportunity will never come to fruition. I love this sign at the entrance to Camp Alma. For me, it represents the very essence of how a community can come together and achieve an exceptional outcome. When Veterans Legacy was incorporated, I asked my good friend, Dr. Gerald Harper, an exceptionally talented artist, by the way, to help design the logo, which he did, donating his efforts to the cause. Our executive director, Mark Oberle, designed the sign structure, but then we needed someone to actually build it. Long story short, his wife's family live in Sutherland, and we were put in contact with the Sutherland High School woodshop instructor by his brother-in-law, who volunteers there helping special needs students. Mark and I visited the woodshop, which was an amazing experience unto itself. The sign was a minimal challenge for the students, and in July they called to say it was done. When we asked as to what we owed them, the answer was, we're donating this to the cause. Mark then talked with the great folks at Gene Stringfield Building Materials, and they very graciously donated the timbers to mount the sign. Lastly, our good friends at Lane Electric Co-op sent a truck out to auger the holes. Veterans Legacy thanks them all, and I would say this is a superb example of how a community can collaborate to solve a problem. Thanks again to the City Club of Eugene for this opportunity. And I would like to thank Jessica Thornton for helping me with the IT.
Thank you. Now we'll take about a 5-minute break to come up with questions from each table, and then we'll return with audience questions. So please remember, only City Club members are allowed to ask questions at the microphone.
This is KLCC Eugene 89.7, KLCO Newport 90.5, 89.1 KLFR Reedsport, and at 88.1 KLFO Florence, KMPQ Roseburg, KLBR Bend. KLCC is a service of Lane Community College. We're on Facebook and Twitter and online at klcc.org.
Welcome back to the November 10th City Club program, Expanding Veterans Services in Lane County. City Club is a nonprofit organization. Support for City Club is provided by our members and sponsors, including Hearing Associates, Hacksaw, the Housing Authority Community Services Agency of Lane County, Jerry Detelm, Architect, Landscape Architect, and George Rohde Repair Shops, one of our Sapphire sponsors. And special thanks to our in-kind sponsors, University of Oregon Academic Extension, for our venue where we meet each week here at the UO Baker Center, and Dot Dotson's Photography, and KRVM 91.9 Radio, Before we go to member questions, remember to keep your questions short and to the point. Thank you.
Hi, thank you for being here. My name is Roz Stein, City Club member. I had a question that is I've thought about for a long time. When I see homeless people on the street and the sign, it's often a vet. And it's hard for me to understand. Are they just playing games and it's not really a vet? Or is it true that, we know Thomas Egan died and he was a vet on the street. But I always think, well, these people must have access to housing, and yet they're out there homeless, begging.
Thank you. Yes, well, first of all, there's definitely a problem in our country that veterans are homeless. I think the statistics show that veterans are disproportionately represented in the homeless population, and so there are definitely homeless veterans. Whether a particular individual is truly a veteran or, served in the military but may have had some issues and was discharged less than honorably, and so that impacts their ability to access services, that's going to be what that individual's stories are. There are significant programs within VA to help with homelessness among veterans. Under President Obama, the VA declared that they would attempt to end homelessness among veterans in 5 years. That has not come to be, but certainly many more resources were dedicated to that effort. There's dedicated Section 8 vouchers. There's a program called HUD-VASH it's a joint effort through the Department of Housing and Urban Development and then VA-supported housing, where veterans can qualify for Section 8 vouchers. Still, though, in our community, much of the problems that our community faces impact our veterans. So lack of affordable housing, lack of available housing stock, those impact our veterans as well. And so even if they qualify for a Section 8 voucher, sometimes they have difficulty using it, and there's only a limited number, so there's a wait list. So yes, definitely a true problem. Locally, with the efforts of Project 365, we got to effective zero for a while with homeless veterans, where the veterans we were aware of were in the process of at least of getting housing, but that's been a difficult status to maintain. So yeah, certainly a difficult problem.
I'm Robin Fletcher, City Club member since 2004. And my table, there were some memories of the GI Bill and how helpful it was to vets coming back from service. And we hadn't heard about it for a while, and we were wondering if it's still out there. Is it still available and being used?
Yes, many credit the GI Bill after World War II with really creating the middle class of America. And it has existed for military personnel, for veterans, since that time period. In maybe 2005, 2007, they revamped the GI Bill. It's now known as the post-9/11 GI Bill. They expanded the period of time under which a veteran can use it from 10 to 15 years initially, and also increased the benefit significantly. Historically, it was a flat monthly rate, maybe $1,000, $1,200. So it didn't matter if you were going to school X, that was $5,000 a month, or school Y, that was $500 a month, you'd get that flat rate. Under the post-9/11 GI Bill, they pay the school directly up to the maximum in-state tuition amount. So I guess we're on the radio. Oregon was pretty clever in how they submitted the maximum in-state tuition rate. They used OHSU's per credit rate for the medical school. So there's a very high headroom for the benefit. I think it was like $432 per credit hour, where U of O and LCC are, maybe $100, $150 at most. So really good, strong benefit. It was also defined in a way that would allow those called up out of the Guard and reserves to use it who were deployed. And so it wasn't just limited to regular active duty troops, but if you're deployed for, I think, at least 12 months out of the Guard or Reserve, you had access to a portion of it. And if you served 36 months after September 11, 2001, you're entitled to up to 100%. So we had a lot of local individuals deployed out of the Oregon National Guard, maybe for a year or two in total, but, you know, 70% of $400 still covers the local tuition rate. So a lot of veterans were able to obtain education through it. Recently, the details haven't been promulgated in rule yet, so I don't know for sure exactly how it'll play out, but they've converted the post 9/11 GI Bill to what they're calling the Forever GI Bill. So recognizing the educational and employment trends in our nation today, instead of setting a 15-year limit at some period of time, maybe 2012 or 2015, I'm not sure when it'll go retroactively into effect, folks discharged after that date will be able to use this benefit forever. So it won't have a delimiting date. So yes, definitely still exists, even more robust than it was for many decades after World War II. So one of the big benefits of military service outside, you know, the kind of day-to-day stuff that my office helps with. Thank you.
Hello, Marty Wilde, City Club member. The shooting down in Texas brought some issues to light about sort of the way we look at veterans who have justice involvement. There, he had apparently been in a mental health facility and escaped. He was prosecuted for his crimes on active duty, you know, appropriately, and got a bad conduct discharge. What happened next was kind of problematic in the sense that that bad conduct discharge disqualified him from a lot of the health services he might have been otherwise able to access. And, you know, who knows what was going on with him, but clearly he's someone who could have benefited from treatment. Are we seeing any progress towards acknowledging that there might be an interest, a societal interest in providing services to folks who've had justice involvement that maybe disqualified them from some benefits, but in getting them services?
So that is one of the difficulties in providing services to those who served in the military. Under federal law, the individual in Texas is not considered a veteran. One must have a discharge under honorable conditions. And so the VA has some wiggle room to administratively determine that a non-dishonorable discharge could qualify. So theoretically, that individual could apply for VA benefits with his bad conduct discharge, and VA could look at the actual character and nature and details of that person's service and make a determination that in spite of what the Army may have provided for their character of service, that under their determination they may see that there were extenuating circumstances and find that person eligible. But, you know, it's a difficult process to go through. VA certainly is sympathetic in cases where we can point to clear kind of underlying causes that resulted in the behavior that led to the problems with their military service. So some examples, we have folks, you know, two deployments to Iraq, they come home, may or may not have been diagnosed with PTSD, or later in life, we do find that they've been addressing that condition, and medical professionals are able to say, you know, some of these problems they had with their command, the authority problems, you know, the disciplinary issues is a manifestation of their PTSD, and they're able to access care within the VA. But it's a long kind of administrative battle before we even then get to the battle of whether the VA can find this particular person's eligible for particular benefits. So definitely a lot of bureaucracy involved. So those are general comments. I'm not making any comments about that individual in Texas. I'll just leave that there. So yeah, it's definitely, the military has also been more sympathetic to reviewing character discharge situations for individuals when there are later PTSD or traumatic brain injury diagnoses. And so the military is being much more sympathetic for those cases as well. But, you know, it also kind of presupposes that the person is able to engage with the process sufficiently to get through it. Another difficulty for a lot of folks. So,
thank you.
Difficult situation, but yeah, some potential, and we're definitely, my office is willing to help folks figure out what the possibilities are.
Thank you. Go ahead, Bob.
Bob Cassidy, City Club member. I'm interested in the political aspects of the veterans. We know that half the people in the country do not vote. What is the track record for veterans? That politicians do not refer to the voting bloc of veterans. Is there something going on that we don't know?
And what is the question? Just to clarify the question.
What is their voting pattern of veterans?
Great. Yeah, that's a very good question.
Probably one I'm not. So I guess, is there something going on that I'm not aware of? I would say probably a lot of things. In that realm, you know, with military service, you know, what motivates military service, I think, for a lot of individuals is a desire to serve their community and their country. And with voting being such a similar sort of effort that someone can use, I would expect that the percent of veterans who vote is higher than the general population. But I don't know. I haven't looked into that. As for kind of the political support for veterans issues, thankfully it's quite strong. It's really one of those issues that crosses party lines, and so it's not a Republican issue, it's not a Democratic issue, it's not an independent issue. You know, I've not really experienced anyone in elected office that has ever expressed anything other than, what do our veterans need? How can we best serve those veterans? So I'm very thankful for all the support, you know, my office locally has received through our elected county officials, as well as our state officials that have implemented state pass-through funds for county veteran service offices. And I think that's similar at the federal level as well. I know our local federal elected officials are very staunch advocates for our veterans. When we have difficulty dealing with the VA bureaucracy, our toughest cases, we refer to them, and they're able to really help cut through that red tape.
Thank you.
Jerry Smith, City Club member, an old veteran. I want to hope you can sort out for me what's actually going on now. When I was a young enlistee, we were considered completely separate from the reserves or the National Guard, and that lasted for a long time, even though the president would then get a military event with not enough staff, and he'd call up the reserves or the guard to do service, and then they'd come home and not be veterans. Is that still happening? Are they still excluded from VA care?
There's a definition of veteran in the United States Code. And basically, it's active duty for those who served after 1980, active duty for at least 24 months or for the period of time called up by the president. And active duty for training purposes does not qualify under that statute. And so if an individual solely serves in the National Guard or Reserves, doesn't ever get called up under United States Code Title 10, then they won't create veteran status. That may change, or that may have changed for those who are retired from National Guard or Reserve Service and served 20 years. Congress was talking about creating an exception to the kind of definition that cuts out that Guard and Reserve Service from the definition of veteran. I'm not 100% sure if that passed. However, if an individual is called up out of the Guard or Reserve and deploys, then that creates veteran status. Our local National Guard unit, our local Reserve units, multiple deployments over the last 15 years to Iraq and Afghanistan. So the majority of them now are considered, you know, official veterans and are able to access VA healthcare services. But yeah, unfortunately, if someone just serves 4 years in the Guard, does their duty honorably, completes their drill obligations, that wouldn't create veteran status.
Thank you for clarifying that.
Ruth Daimler, City Club member. You brought back a lot of memories to me, and I thank you for that, but you also pointed out something that I think we could be thinking about, and that's the repeated service, since we have so few servicemen who are enlisted. And I initiated the first servicemen's canteen in the Korean War, so I had thousands of servicemen that I met with every week, and I became a big sister to many. And they served in the Korean War. They would go over once or maybe twice. And now you pointed out that it's repeated because there's so few that are enlisted. And this seems like just a terrible crime.
Is there a question?
And so I was wondering, has there been any movement to enlarge the force so that we don't see? Of course, we hope to never have another war like the Iraq War, too. But I was wondering, has there been some obstacle against? I've never heard it mentioned like you mentioned it today. And I would appreciate knowing if there's been some move to stop the repeated going over of the same people, because after one time, they can be devastated. And to have it repeated so many times, like you pointed out, and I was wondering.
Thank you. We're running a little short on time, so brief answer, and then I'd like to ask a question about the Legacy Project, unless Ralph's question is about Legacy Project.
Yeah, so unfortunately, there haven't been really any significant efforts to...
Ralph, we'll have time.
...greatly expand the number of military personnel. There's been some talk about... national service obligations where military service could be a part of that, thereby increasing the number of troops available in conflicts, but it doesn't seem like any have gone very far. Congress just authorized an increase of $20,000 troops in the latest defense budget, but I think that's after a few years of reducing troop levels. So yeah, should something major happen, it'll still be borne by a very small percentage of our population.
Great, thank you. Go ahead.
Ralph Pledger, a member for about a year. I was just going to ask the speakers to elaborate a little more on local volunteer opportunities in veterans assistance activities.
Certainly, from a veteran legacy point of view, the volunteerism that we need to have this happen is a major issue and a goal. I shouldn't say an issue, it's a major goal. Because we feel like in supporting our veterans to heal, that community support behind them, and if you look at the Vietnam era, and I can tell by the hair color and a lot of here that we're all in that category, it was not a great time to come back. And there's a lot of leftover angst that goes along with this and trying to still deal with problems. And I think you cannot underestimate the community support that each of these folks gets, and we need to be able to do this as efficiently with our finances as possible. There's many people with many talents, and it certainly helps the bottom line look much better and be able to extend more benefits to veterans if we don't have to hire away all services. And again, the community support that the camaraderie that the volunteers get along with this is immense. But again, that enveloping feeling from the vets that everybody's here to help them get well, I think is invaluable.
Great. One more question. This is Sandra Bishop. That was Dr. Laveau. This was a question that came up during the break about the Legacy Project. People were wondering. You had said that it's male residential at this point. You're looking in the future to have also services for women once you get going. But what's the total budget, and when would you project an actual residential program opening there?
let me get out the crystal ball. challenging thing. The first thing is in the Register Guard this morning in the op-ed page, our Vice President Dan Buchwald, who is maybe mentioned earlier on, is the captain at the Lane County Jail, was asked that question as well, and he gave a great answer to kind of give you a feeling for what the expenses are going to be. It costs $300,000 to house 5 prisoners for a year. So I don't think we're going to need that kind of money to be able to do this, because there's going to be other ways to do it. But just to give you an idea, and I mentioned early on that when the camp was running full open, it was 100 to 110 inmates. But that was in circumstances with bunk beds. You know, we're not talking about a 5-star hotel here. So from that point of view, you can't have that as a therapeutic site. So at the most, I think we would be in the 40 individuals as they come on. And as an aside, we're looking at treatment periods of anywhere from 4 months to up to 18 months. The reason these folks are here is because they have not been able to respond to other treatment endeavors. And it's not going to happen overnight. And so when you see this, some of the, when we say 40, we're talking about there may be people there that are needing a long-term answer to really get reset. And the expenses could be and will be striking, but there's a lot of money going other places that would be well placed going here, and that's our firm belief.
Great, thank you very much. Before we thank our speakers today, a couple of announcements. Oh, time just expired. We want to thank public radio station KLCC 89.7 for airing City Club programs on Monday at 6:30 after the program. And also thank you to Dan Bryant for getting our programs on a YouTube channel. And thank you to Community Television of Lane County, cable channel 29, for televising recent City Club programs. And next week's forum, please join us on November 17th. Join us for a presentation on firearms, risks, and rights. I'm sorry, I said it wrong. Firearms, rights, and risks. We have two very good speakers. We'll have Senator Floyd Prozanski and Representative Mike Nierman. More details and information about future programs and other information about City Club can be found on the website at cityclubofeugene.org. And now I'd like to thank Dr. John LeBeau and J.B. Riley. Thank you very much for your time and details today. We really appreciate knowing about these important programs. So thank you very much. That concludes today's program.